America Weekend.
Just a man with a chainsaw in his hand, and he's come to take a stand for me and you.
Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge.
And I'm Kara DeFalco.
Our next guests are indelibly dug into our pop culture. First, Anthony C. Ferrante. He is the directorial force behind the godfather of our modern times, the franchise known as Sharknado. Second, Robbie Rist. One of the most recognized child actors of his generation, these two men are also accomplished musicians and have joined forces musically to form the band Quint and other bands and create the music for the Sharknado films. Anthony and Robbie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
It is terrific to have you guys here. Now, we had Anthony back on during the premiere week of Sharknado The Fourth Awakens, and Robbie's name came up, and we thought it would be so cool to have both of you on together. Now, first of all, tell us about how you guys met up and how this all started.
Well, I think we met through either it was a Tony Perkins or was it Regent?
A hard rock. A friend of ours was in a hard rock band. With, I don't know, 20 years ago or something. I met Anthony through that, and Anthony was at the time working on his like first or second short, and he was looking for some music for it, and asked me to help out, and then that was. Those many years ago, and we're still doing it.
I think what it started off with one of the shorts where he did a bunch of guitar-based music. It was a short I did. And then the short after that, we were licensing a bunch of songs from local bands, and we went to, basically anybody that we knew that had a band that had some cool stuff, and Robbie contributed a few things, and he recommended a few people. And I think it was probably like 30 tracks. And at the last minute, one of the bands who was recommended through somebody else, their management got involved. And this is like a no-budget short. There's going to be no money made on any of this stuff. And the manager got involved and suddenly wanted all this money and all this guarantees and everything. And I put a lot of my money into it. So we literally were finished with the movie, and they were starting to cause problems. And Robbie said, Come over to my studio. And so I went over to Robbie's studio, and he said, okay, what song is it? It's this. Okay, it's a minute. All right, we're going to write a song. And so I think in an hour and a half, we wrote a replacement song that was sort of in the same tempo, so it didn't, you know, mess up the flow of the movie. And that was kind of the beginning of, oh, you know, this is kind of cool.
If you can churn out a song in an hour and get it done, you kind of know the whole thing is working.
Yeah, no, it's actually pretty amazing that Anthony. I believe Anthony is part wizard.
Really?
Yeah, he's in that he's capable of under the worst of circumstances, under the most terrible of odds, he manages to pull a win out every time. And he does it. You know, it happens with the music thing. It happens when he makes these movies.
Yeah.
You know, he knows what he wants, which makes it easy for everybody else, I guess.
And you know what I like? I like, you know, the movies stand on their own as films, but I love the music, and that's why I thought this would be great, because each one of the Sharknado films has its own, you know what I think of? I'm thinking of like these James Bond themes. It's like, you know, you think Nobody Does It Better, you're thinking Goldfinger, all of a sudden I'm thinking Sharknado Rhapsody, I'm thinking The Ballad of Sharknado, I'm thinking Big Apple, all of a sudden I think the songs are just as important as the movies.
Well, yeah, you know, this is where it started getting interesting. When I did my first feature, it sort of was the same thing as that short. It's like, look, Robbie, I need a couple songs, I was looking around for some blues stuff, and every time we looked for other bands, no one had anything that I liked that actually sounded legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I give Robbie a ton of credit. I mean, he's like Elvis Costello and Prince. I mean, he's a guy that can like do just about anything and everything when it comes to music. He could figure the stuff out. We call him the mathematician.
Wow.
You know, he understands this so well. So we did a couple of these songs in the movie, and they just sounded really good. So every movie moving forward, we would end up doing like three or four songs, because when you do low budget movies, licensing an actual legitimate song, you know, you're looking at 50 to 100 grand, maybe
yeah.
200.
Yeah.
I think on Headless Horseman, my second movie, that this is one of the most frustrating parts about it. There were two things that we wanted. We wanted to actually do a cover of an old kind of hymn. And in investigating, you know, the legal rights to it, because over the years, other people would take that song and add lyrics to it or add different music to it, there was a fuzziness about the copyright to it. So even though technically it was a traditional song, we couldn't 100% say that that song was free and clear. And then I also wanted to use a song called Season of the Witch by Donovan, and I went through the whole process, got a hold of him, and we did all this. And then when it came down to the money, the producers want to spend it. It wasn't a ton of money, but the agreement with the publishing company was this incremental thing. Donovan had no problem with us doing it, but it was just cost prohibitive. So then from that point moving forward, we just started doing our own songs. And doing it basically for nothing until Sharknado happened. And then and that was sort of the joke, too. We would change the name of the band for each movie. So there'd be like the Gingerbread Men. There was like a Black and Blues Review, Jimmy and the Applejack Kid. And when we came to Sharknado, it's like, well, it's a shark movie, so we should call ourselves Squint.
Yeah.
And the thing about, you were talking about how the music fits the movies, I think all the stuff that we do for these movies, we kind of figure out what the tone of the film is, and then the songs actually pertain to what's going on in the movie. They work as songs. I mean, there's two levels that they have to work on. One, we want to write a whole song. We don't write half a song. We just make a full song. But they also sort of, you know, if you're listening to them, there's stuff that's going on with the characters, and I think that's kind of the fun part. So in a weird way, all the movies I've done are technically musicals, but not traditional musicals.
Right, not in that sense. Now, is it difficult to write songs, to keep writing songs about sharks for four different movies?
Does the well ever run dry?
It hasn't yet.
Good.
Sharknado Rhapsody, well, here's the thing. Sharknado Rhapsody was something that we talked about on the first movie. We wanted to do
really?
A rock opera. And Ballad of Sharknado was going to be the first piece of the rock opera. And I think we sat down and started working on it, and it's like, this is like too good.
Yeah.
let's just do this. And then so every movie would go, okay, well, we got to do the rock opera. And it's like, okay, it didn't happen that one. And so on the fourth one, it was like, we are making this rock opera happen. And even the year before, I think we'd come up with some of the lyrics for it, but it wasn't happening. And I think the problem that we were having is we'd already done a song with sharks in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the issue, what changed everything was that, well, this is another Finch song, the character in the movie played by Ian Ziering.
Mm-hmm.
So it needs to really be about him. He's the man with the plan with his chainsaw in his hand. and then it was like, okay, well, it's not, sharks should not really be anywhere in the song. It should be, we need another piece of the title, and it became, the world ain't going to end unless I say so.
There you go.
So Armageddon, come and get it. The world ain't going to end unless I say so. Once we figured that out, then it was like, okay, it made sense.
Now
I love that song.
Well, you tease some of the lyrics. I mean, you know, and it's a true music aficionado. These are lyrics that touch the heart. Just a man with a chainsaw in his hand, and he's come to take a stand for me and for you. I mean, you know, Dylan, Lennon, McCartney, I don't need that. Give me Wrist. Give me Ferrante. That is music.
It's kind of an update of the Flash theme from Flash Gordon.
Yes.
It was like, in all of these things, you know, Anthony comes in and goes, we can't afford Aerosmith. And I go, Aerosmith, got it.
See, that's a great creative process. Who can we not afford, and then who can we then take from? I like that.
That's
See,
it. Oh, necessity is the mother of all invention.
My God, that's such a good thing.
To his credit, you know, it's an amazing thing that with Anthony, you know, I've been writing songs since I was, you know, 15, and I'm 50 now, and with Anthony, I find myself writing about things like, you know, the Big Apple song, you know, he came in and said, we can't afford New York, New York. And I went, got it, New York, New York. And, you know, he said, let's write our own. And, you know, most of my songs are, you know, just about being lonely and 15 years old and girls don't like me.
Aww.
So the palette of what I've been called upon to draw from has really widened out because of him. And it's actually made me better at what I do.
And this is what I like most about these songs. All right. Anthony sent them to me yesterday. So I'm sitting in my studio at home listening. They are performances and they are like mini movies in themselves. And you said it's important because they set the tone for each of the movies. I mean, with the lyrics, they're fun. You listen from the beginning to the end. It gives you a full story as to what's going on from beginning to end.
Yeah. It's like Anthony said, his movies are, in a really upside down weird way, they're musicals. The songs drive the narrative. So
yeah.
I think the other thing too is Robbie and I talk a lot about, you know, like we'll put something together and after it's over, it'll just kind of, you know, it's an earworm and it doesn't go away.
Hey guys, we're up against the network break, so stay with us. More with Anthony C. Ferrante and Robbie Rist coming up. I'm Ed Kalenge along with Kara DeFalco, and this is America Weekend.
America Weekend.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Would you like to know how to raise a high-achieving kid? I mean, no doubt you want your child to do well in this lifetime, and no doubt you want them to achieve, excel, even surpass what you've achieved. So how do you do it? Here's the science of it. Achieving boys had very nurturing fathers during the first 10 years of life. These fathers cuddled, roughhoused, and comforted them. Then they pulled back when the teen years hit. Girls had fathers who supported athletics and remained emotionally close during their teens, but never pulled back. What's the cheap psychological trick? Nurturing fathers produce achieving children, and there's no need to pull back from girls or boys when they hit their teenage years. You can check out my book, Cheap Psychological Tricks for Parents, at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Big Success in a Minute with George and Mary Lynn.
You may have read one of his books or seen the movie version, but this famous writer almost threw it all away.
In college, he met the love of his life and married her, sold his first short story, and earned a degree.
But he couldn't find a job, so he eked out a living working in an industrial laundry. Every evening and weekend, he wrote.
But he became so frustrated with one story, he threw the whole manuscript into the garbage can. When his wife saw it, she pulled it out and encouraged him to finish it. He did, but not as a short story. Carrie became Stephen King's first published novel.
What projects have you started? Give them a second look. You may scare up some big success.
Find big success at BIGGSuccess.com.
Do you have troubled skin or acne? With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Call Proactive Plus now and receive a 60-day risk-free trial along with two free extras and free shipping. Call 800-393-6139. That's 1-800-393-6139.